I'd like to call the joint study session of the University City City Council and the Commission on Senior Issues to order at 6:30 on October 14th, 2019. Do we have any? I'm sorry. Oh, I apologize. 5:30. I was looking at the regular agenda. Man, sorry about that. We're moving along here quickly. You have before you, members of council, the agenda for tonight's meeting at 6:30. Are there any changes to that agenda at this time? Hearing none. Mr. Rose. Oh, real quickly, I apologize. Are you going to ask everybody to introduce themselves? It's easier for us when the city clerk is going back through the minutes if our guests will take a moment and hit a button at the bottom of the microphone and just introduce yourself so that she'll be able to put your names in the minute, if you would please. So if we will do that, we'll go forward. How's that?
Sounds good.
There you start. Go. Yes, sir.
Wayne Flesh on the Senior Commission.
Thank you.
Carl Reed, Senior Commission.
Thank you. Marcia Mermelstein, Senior Services Coordinator.
Thank you. Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor, two issues. One is I would ask to move off of the regular council agenda, item J2, to the city manager's report.
Okay.
Tonight we have two presentations prepared for you. The first one will be conducted by Director of Planning and Development, Clifford Cross, and he will be discussing with you the infill review board operations. Mr. Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Good evening, Mayor, members of council. Here tonight, one of the things that's come up since I have been here is the role of the infill review board, and are they a true architectural review board, which they are not. When you look at the architectural review board, that's something we will take a look at as part of our comprehensive plan. So what I'm here to do tonight is to give you a background on the infill review board. So when you look at the infill review board, they were established back in 2006 via Ordinance 6617. They were primarily established to address the inability to enforce design standards and specifically the standards of the HOAs. It's comprised of seven members. Three members, which can come from the Planning Commission as well. So you can have a total of 10 members. So seven are appointed by you. Three can be appointed by the Planning Commission. They serve three-year terms. The goal is to have at least two of these members be an architect and the other one to be a landscape architect. I don't think that's always the case, but that is the goal because they deal with both building construction and landscaping as part of their review process. They're also there to field the concerns of the neighboring properties. The purpose of that is to ensure conformity with the neighborhood in which a development is going into. And I stress one thing, though, they are primarily there to address residential development. If you look at the ordinance, they are not there to address any commercial types of development. So basically what they do is they do act as an advisory committee. They have no regulatory authority. They act as a liaison or a mitigator when you have some development within an area of the city that is not regulated by either the Historic Preservation District or part of a site plan review or anything of that nature. So they do act as an advisory committee. So what exactly do they review as part of their review process? They examine applications for residential subdivisions, and they also examine permits associated with building construction. The goal is, as I had said, to achieve general conformity with the neighborhood. Acts very similar to historic preservation in terms of that, with the exception that they have no regulatory authority. Their role is to hear the concerns of the neighbors and see if the facades and fenestration and so forth is consistent with the neighboring properties. They do review all subdivisions associated with lot splits, consolidations, or reconfigurations. They also review any new construction that is associated with a demolished home. When you look at that, one of the things that they do take a look at is if a home was demolished and can be verified it was demolished 3 years ago, they will take a look at that new construction as well for anything that was constructed within that three-year time frame. Some of the factors that they consider is the roof geometries, materials, facade, fenestration, landscaping. Ironically, those are all types of architectural standards that you'll see as part of a HOA's adopted indentures that their trustees will review as part of that their process. So when you hear a case that goes before the Infill Review Board, just because an application comes in doesn't necessarily mean it's going to go before the Infill Review Board. So what happens is when it comes to the zoning administrator for a permit review, the zoning administrator reviews that application and determines if it's required to meet the notice requirements of the Infill Review Board. If that's the case, then the notices are sent to all property owners within 300 feet that have the same street frontage as the property where the development is taking place. In addition to that, there is additional notices sent to all property owners within 150 feet. So you get all the property owners along the street and then property owners behind and in front that are within 150 feet. This is where it gets tricky and where it determines that it may or may not go before the Infill Review Board. If all those property owners are noticed and 60% of them come together with a petition within 10 days of receipt of those letters, it is the role of the zoning administrator to then schedule the Infill Review Board meeting so there can be a public hearing. That's where the neighbors have the opportunity to come before the Infill Review Board and identify their concerns and what they think needs to happen to ensure conformity with their neighborhood standards. At the completion of, then you have the IRB meeting, and then at the completion of that IRB meeting, they then forward a recommendation to the city manager's office and ultimately to you as a city council. So the thing I want to stress about it is the Infill Review Board is not a regulatory board and not an architectural review board. They simply serve as an advisory committee to staff for any development that comes in and is petitioned by the neighboring property owners. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have, and thank you.
Are we being asked for feedback in terms of the process as it is now and how we might like to see it modified?
Yeah, we are. And that's also going to come out as part of the comprehensive plan, because one of the things that we've talked about when we've been asked as a staff is, well, what about an architectural review board? Well, the problem with developing an architectural review board is we have to have design standards to follow to ensure consistency. And that's only going to come as part of a comprehensive plan process where we start to develop form-based codes and design standards for particular character areas, so to speak. So, yeah, we are asking for your feedback now and in the future on if we should disband of the IRB at this point and continue to move forward with a consideration of an architectural review board in the future, or if we should continue to move forward with the Infill Review Board until while we develop that process. The reason I'm saying this is they haven't met in 7 years, and we have to reestablish a board if we're going to continue to do this. In the interim, the intent is to take it before the Planning Commission. If we get a 60% response, we have not. We've had one project that we sent out the notices and did not receive a 60% response. So,
I just think the way it was set up in the beginning is very reactionary. It requires our residents to get together, and I think particularly in a lot of the older neighborhoods in the first ward, and I know there are older neighborhoods in the second and the third wards too, I'd like to see that process more proactive and setting a requirement essentially that these hearings do take place and that the residents aren't required to petition. There's obviously a lot that's gone in in and around my neighborhood that has had a lot of folks very upset. And I think at the very least, I'd like to see an architectural review board down the line. and I understand the planning that goes into that. The other feedback I would give is I think broadening the scope of notice would be potentially a good idea, too. I don't know what that should be, but... Okay.
My question would have has always been that I think the burden needs to be shifted from the neighbors back to the developer. I think that asking all the neighbors to get together and get their 60%, I think particularly the folks who live on the east or the west or the north or the south of the house in question, I think you're basically putting the onus almost on them to then go to their neighbors and beg for a signature to get someone who's not going to be nearly as concerned, particularly by the folks in the back who don't see it. So to me, I think we've kind of got this flipped in that, and I would agree with Mr. Hale, since we live relatively close to each other, that I think some of the building that has gone on the vacant lots in the first ward is not conducive to the neighborhood in the slightest, and from building materials to taking over the entire lot to really not necessarily matching the houses around them. So if it's a process to get to an architectural review board, then so be it. But the current process for an infill review board, I think we could almost go up and down some of those streets though and ask if really notices went out on some of those homes. I mean, candidly, this is before most everybody on staff was here, but I'm not thinking a lot of those notices have gone out, because I can't imagine most of the neighbors wouldn't have said, we've got a problem here. But I still believe it's not the neighbor's obligation to organize a petition. I think it would be the developer who has bought a home, torn down a home, put up a home, and then is saying, "This, you know, how does this work?" So, Mr. Hales.
Thank you. You said it much more clearly than I did, Mayor. One other thing I would add to it is I think we should consider sending even potentially in addition through the process, because I can think of a handful of homes that had people in my neighborhood very wound up where they increased the size of the home by, say, you know, 60%, and it's virtually the entire lot is a home. The materials don't match. So I don't know if it's worth taking a look at how large of an addition might be added, but when you're taking up, you know, 75% of your lot with a giant home next to homes that are of a different scale, I think that's a concern too.
Well, there's a couple quick fixes to that portion where we can do amendments to our zoning ordinance and reduce FARs, which are floor area ratios, to fit the lot sizes in some of the neighborhoods. Those are things that are addressed as part of a form-based code, but there are some text amendments we can look at to get more regulatory control over FARs and impervious surface ratios and so forth. Yes.
Would this board have any responsibility for accessibility? Thinking primarily of older adults, but also folks with disabilities, either in the home or in the neighborhood, like sidewalks, anything along that line that would be?
No, the only thing that would ever control accessibility standards are the accessibility codes and ADA standards that are associated with primarily commercial and federally funded types of projects. On individual single-family homes outside of the curb, the sidewalks that are in the public right-of-way, we really don't have a lot of the board definitely doesn't, nor does staff, where most of the administrative reviews address ADA standards as part of the review process.
So it is addressed?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. My understanding that the reason we haven't had any of these issues brought before the infill review board, I mean, technically we have one, we just don't have people sitting in the seats, was because the neighbors weren't responding and they just didn't have anything to do on the board. And so the members just stopped showing up to meetings and they never got reappointed. Right. And so it just became a board that didn't have anything going on. So that's what I'm hoping that that's the kind of changes, as the mayor said and Mr. Hale said, that we're moving in a direction so that there's going to be something that gets done, because what we're finding, at least what I've heard when I've been out, is the neighbors find out about it when ground is broken and a fence goes up, and then suddenly they see it, which is way too late. So we need to, I think, flip it as was discussed. In that frame, moving forward, what's the time frame for us to either get the infill review board moving but having teeth, or having an architectural review board? Because we're already 7 years past where this has been done. If it's 2 years, now we're talking 9 years before anybody has anything to do with this. What's the time frame?
I think if we're going to give the infill review board teeth, we can do that much quicker than an architectural review board, because the biggest problem with the architectural review board is developing the design standards that are consistent and a guiding manual, so to speak, so you can ensure consistency. So I think what we can do as a staff is we can put together some alternatives and some quick ordinance amendments that may give us a little more control and teeth. I don't think they'll ever have the full regulatory control at the infill, but I think by amending some of the provisions of the current ordinance, we can definitely make sure the neighbors are not as burdened to activate the infill review board, review of it. One of the things we're doing is we can make it where if it's in one of the subdivisions that have trustees, we can also notice the trustees, and then the trustees can make an application on behalf of it. Because two things that really does: A, it makes sure the individuals who deal with that have been noticed. But the other thing I think what it does is it allows for the developer to know and them to basically say, look, the city may not have regulatory control, but you're in and you're required to follow our indentures. And by the way, if you don't follow our indentures, you could be sued. I mean, plain and simple. It might open up their eyes to their design standards.
Ms. Carr.
Thank you. We did have a problem in Ward 2 with a private subdivision, and I'm not sure I would call it a problem, but the neighbors suddenly found out that the building going up was not going to be brick, as many of them are. Instead was, I think, going to be sided. And so it seems to me like the suggestions made by my colleagues would at least put people, including the trustees, but people on notice. What I'm also concerned about is that there are many public subdivisions. So, we have to make an outreach to them, to let them know that something is happening, and so that they can provide their input. It as you're describing this, I'm assuming this is just an input situation, a hearing for the neighbors and or the trustees, basically.
It is. That's exactly what it is. It even says in the ordinance they have no regulatory authority. Okay. I mean, it calls it out. And that's what it does.
And then there would they're advisory to the staff, but not necessarily to the plan commission or anything else, unless there's...
Correct.
I mean, and it goes nowhere, really.
The only time it could ever come into play is part of a site plan review or a conditional use permit, where you have that extra opportunity. But most of those come in on commercial uses anyway. Us as a staff, the dilemma is we get a recommendation on this, and the developer says, I don't care. I'm meeting your building codes. What teeth do we have to stop it? Then we put the city in a position by not approving a permit based on our current codes and regulations.
Okay, so reactivating the infill review board while we wait for the comprehensive plan to develop some kind of standards is really nothing more than giving the neighbors a chance to be notified?
At this point. We'd have to find, we can do some research and see if there's any regulatory, because we can take some of those provisions out in regulatory and see what we can do in terms of a regulatory standpoint. We just want to make sure we don't do anything that, I know this sounds strange, but constitutes an illegal type of taking type of situation on their
And while we're looking at the materials and the designs and other, there's another issue with infill, and it's often that it creates stormwater problems,
mm-hmm.
Depending on how it is sited and how high up it is relative to the existing houses. So do you foresee that anything like that would be a part of this, or do we need to have some kind of a process where yes, the look of the building goes to one commission, but then immediately it has to go to another to look at
Correct.
Impacts on the neighbors.
Yeah, those are things we can take a look at as part of the process. We can actually look at those. That's when you talk stormwater, that also becomes part of the administrative review in stormwater detention and impervious surface ratios. So I think one of the things we need to be proactive at and look at as a staff is, are the impervious surface ratios and floor area ratios appropriate mm-hmm. for those lots? I think what that potentially does and how you address that, if you're going to make the footprint smaller and you want to get a little bigger home, then your floor area goes up a little bit. So those are things that you got to, you know, checks and balances, see what works, see what's the best fit to ensure consistency with the neighborhood. So I think, you know, for us at this point, it's just to do some additional research and see if we can see how some other communities have done it, start to draft some options and see what we can bring in terms of regulatory control and how we put that both in A, our infill review board ordinance, but B, I think more importantly, somehow fit it into our zoning ordinance for districts that are impacted by that.
Because some of the things I'm observing, not only here, but primarily to some of our neighbors south, is that they are building from setback to setback, leaving no room to for water absorption or even retention. And so I'm kind of concerned that yeah. will get overlooked, unless it's specifically addressed,
yeah.
you know, as we develop both this and architectural review.
Absolutely. And I'll give you a classic example, garages. You look at our accessory standards, those are things we have to change. There's not a set maximum size for a garage.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at accessories in that zoning district, for example, it basically says you just have to have 800 square feet of green space, so to speak. So everything else is how do you interpret it? It's like, so we got to be clear on how that's done. So those are some of the quick amendments I think we're getting ready to put together from a zoning ordinance standpoint to bring to what are you and the Planning Commission for review, and ultimately we're going to do a bulk amendment on several quick fixes.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and council members, tonight the purpose for the discussion was just to get a better understanding of what you want to see in a policy. And so I think that we have that, as well as to inform you that if the goal was to have an architectural review board, it would need its own set of design standards, and that would take a significant amount of time. What I'm hearing, though, is that the stopgap measure of strengthening the infill review board would be acceptable for at least on a stopgap basis. So at this point, we will draft a legislation based upon what we've heard and bring that proposed policy back to another study session for you to take a look at to ensure that it's meeting the objectives that you've just outlined.
Real quickly, though, before we move on, even if we bring it back with some changes, there's still no teeth.
Right.
I mean, there's.
Right.
I mean, that's the only thing I just want to.
I mean, I'll do some research and see if there's anything
yeah.
we can fit in there. But as I mean, I don't see a lot.
Okay.
Right. We will need to establish some standards, even with the infill review board, but the council has the ability to change the ordinances. So we can have as much teeth as what's acceptable for you, at least on a stopgap basis, knowing that in the long term, the intention is to have its own set of design standards.
Do you want me to sure. discuss the process? A little bit, okay. The current infill review board has jurisdiction over subdivision requests and also building permits. And so if you want to get into regulating Mr. Cross was talking about, maybe the floor ratio, the watt size, certain architectural features, that would be under the zoning umbrella. Mm-hmm. And so the process for passing an ordinance would involve amending the zoning code, and then the standards would be reflected there. That, of course, goes through the Plan Commission before it hits the council. So it really depends on what ultimately the council's trying to achieve here. Is it changing some of the architectural requirements, some of the dimensional requirements? If so, then we would go through the zoning code to do that. If it's to have some input on building permits, the building permit standards are in the building code, which is not part of zoning. And so technical specifications could be changed in the building code, but you certainly couldn't have an infill review board with a roving commission to change building standards, building code standards, and nor could you with respect to zoning code standards. Now, there could be some recommendations made by the infill review board regarding interpretation of existing standards, and to advise staff or the council in a situation where the matter goes before the council. Lastly, on subdivisions, as you know, we have a subdivision code, and there are certain standards in the subdivision code that have to be met. Certainly, the infill review board could make recommendations on those, but again, at the end of the day, it's going to be a question of whether those standards are met, and that would be really largely an administrative interpretation by staff. And so I think in terms of drafting any legislation, it would help to know exactly what it is that the council is trying to accomplish. Certainly, you could provide a mechanism for neighborhood input, which is what is taking place right now, or conceivably could take place right now. And this is probably more as opposed to an individual permit application. A broader picture: what kind of problems are we having? What kind of legislation should be passed to address the problem? So more at a general policymaking level, as opposed to an individual: does this property comply with our existing code? This problem's been around since, or this issue's been around since 2002. If you look at the council record, it's been discussed at various times over the years by the council. So for 17, 18 years, these issues have been talked about, resulting in legislation in 2006, which is what you have before you.
Okay, thank you. Due to the fact that we have other guests here, we probably ought to move to the senior commission. And I want to very quickly, Mr. Smotherson wanted to take just a quick minute as you're getting ready for.
Thank you, Mayor. I just simply wanted to give information to the Senior Commission about an award-winning program out of Springfield, and they won one of the Innovation Award nominees for 2019, and this was from the Municipal League Conference. And I just wanted to pass along the information so that they would look at it and see if something that they could develop as a program here in University City. And so I thank you. That's it.
Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Council members and members of the Commission on Seniors, thank you for allowing me to present to you tonight. Tonight's presentation, or tonight's discussion, really addresses two issues. One is to discuss in general terms senior issues, such as what Councilmember Smotherson just raised, and secondly is to ensure compliance with our codes, or at least so that everyone understands what those codes state. The purpose for the Senior Commission was formed by the City Council to evaluate and make recommendations to the Council as well as to staff on senior issues. And it's defined as 50 and older, so I qualify for being a senior. The makeup, it's a 7-member body. The members serve for 2 years, and they have an opportunity to serve for a consecutive second term. The chair of the commission is selected or elected from amongst its members. They are required to meet at least quarterly and such additional meetings as may be required for any transaction of business. Our code is pretty succinct on the senior commission. Those are the general terms up under which they must operate. And so I would open up the floor for any discussion, be it on the codes or issues impacting seniors.
Yeah. Oh, Stella, sorry, I apologize.
I don't know if Councilman Cusick was first, but all right. Well, thank you, City Manager Rose. I'm the liaison to the Senior Commission, and I think while, yes, that is the statutory definition of what the Senior Commission does, I don't think it captures all their activity. They are involved in the programming that takes place related to our seniors. So that's the programming, the kind of the regular programming that takes place several times throughout the week, and then special programming as well that takes place throughout the year. So that's informational sessions, that's a lot of coordination, I think less so this year than in years past, but the Make a Difference Day and supporting our seniors throughout the University City community with home repairs and other items. They may need assistance with. So I have seen a fairly significant amount of activity coming from the Senior Commission that I think has benefited our residents 50 and over in University City.
Thank you, Mayor. I would like to thank the members of the Senior Commission for coming out and visiting with us this evening. And my question to you is, how are we doing as a government and as a city government for our seniors? Are there any issues that you would like to bring to us that need to be addressed?
Wayne Flesh, and there's a couple that would be. First of all, I would like to invite you to any of our meetings. We would love to have you. I mean, if we could make it once a year, that would be great, alternate and whatever. One of the other issues, I also serve on the Senior Commission for St. Louis County, and we have noticed recently an uptick in senior abuse. And we're not sure how to move on this and whatever and whatever it is, but and I haven't really mentioned it to the commission, but I would like to do that. That there's a lot of ways that a senior can be abused, and it's not like by hitting them or anything like that, but so much of it is fiscally, sons and daughters who mislead them and whatever, and seniors don't know that they're being abused. And I'm going to try and move forward with some education in this matter to senior gatherings, whatever, in the library or whatever, that we're going to have somebody talk about what it means to be abused and what kinds of things, and it could happen in your own family, and just to make them aware of it. And I'm not sure we move beyond that, but we would have maybe some legal people there just to address it and go forward with that. But that's one of the things that is relatively new. And we have contacted the prosecuting attorney's office in St. Louis County, and they have acknowledged this, that, in fact, they have assigned an individual to assist with this aspect of service. And whatever, so they've seen it as serious, and it's happening, and so we hope to move forward on that as one of the additional items. It will be on the agenda down the road.
Now, when you mentioned senior abuse, is it just of a financial nature, or is there are there other types of abuses and things that we could, should be addressing?
We don't know. We don't know, but we hear a number of them are monetary types of things. But and they don't know if my child hits me or something like that. Is that acceptable? That type of thing. And but what is in their head? That's why it's an education, and we're going to start with that. At least I would recommend that. Now, later on, there may be some.
Mayor, if I might, just so that all of you know, the individuals that provide support to the Senior Commission, I'd like to recognize Darren Dunkel, who is in the audience. Darren, you would wave. And he's the director that is over Parks and Recreation. Also, Linda Taylor, who is the assistant director. And Marsha Memelstein. I always butcher that name. Sorry, Marsha. who is the direct support over senior services. One of the reasons that I also want to mention them is that we need to take a closer look at the services that we provide to our seniors. I certainly have an interest in doing some sort of senior fair in the future, and that fair is simply a way of providing information to seniors, be that on the construction of wills, providing you with greater opportunity for socialization through game nights or something like that. But my interest is in making sure and recommending to the council that we make our program more robust. So that's, I will say, what you will hopefully see in the future.
You remind me, I would like to also thank everyone for sending Marsha our way. She has been an asset to us, and she's very caring and concerned about these seniors, and she has a whole crew of them every Tuesday and Thursday, and she just loves being with them. And you can tell it. You can see it. Thank you.
Thank
Marsha.
You.
Yes, and thank you. Is there, if I were to guess, would the main gathering points for seniors, just would it be the community center, the library, and if there were gatherings, and Centennial Commons, those would be the three that primarily would go in church. Yeah, okay, private. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Someone else? Did I? Glory? Can you, or you can use John's? Whatever. Nice to see you.
Good evening. I personally wanted to thank the city manager, Marsha, Darren, Linda, and the council representatives and the mayor for allowing me to speak in behalf of the seniors. It did so much for them, and it meant so much to them for the city to take the actions that they did. Although that was the beginning, and we still have a long way to go, I'd like to ask a couple of questions. We have the agreement in place now with Aging Ahead. Do we know or have any idea how long that's going to be? From the reading of it, it stated that the city or Aging Ahead could terminate it at any time. So basically what I'm trying to find out, are we going to continue to move with that agreement for 2020?
I'm sorry, Mayor, I'd ask Darren to speak to that. I can tell you, and don't want to speak on behalf of the mayor and council, but whether it is Aging Ahead or whether it is the city providing its own senior program solely, that was the direction that I received from the mayor and council when this issue first emerged. So I'm hopeful that we will be able to continue with a not-for-profit that can supplement our efforts, but I think that the mayor and council have been very steadfast in saying we'll have a program. Yep.
Okay.
Our current agreement with Aging Ahead is just a one-year contract. We'll be reviewing that as we move forward to see if that's something that we want to continue with or something that we want to improve upon. But it is a one-year agreement at this time.
Okay. So the reason I'm asking is trifold. Okay. Right now, I understand and I know that they provide the transportation and the meals. If the city or when the city has their own, quote, quote, we would provide our own meals, the city would, correct?
That is something that we'd have to look into, yes.
Okay. Well, the reason I'm asking all of that is because, and I'm not going to say the name of the person that I spoke with the city, but one of my concerns was, even though we may only have 50 seniors in our current program, our vision should be bigger than that. And I threw out the question, how would you feel if we had 100 seniors in the program? And the reason I'm saying it openly like this, are we prepared to take on 25 additional people, say, in the month of November?
I think we're prepared at this time to take on more, and with our Aging Ahead contract, there is not a limit on the amount of people that we serve. It's just based that they get state funding based on the number of people who do attend to pay for the transportation and for the meals.
So let's just say December 31st, we have an additional 50 seniors who have joined in the program. Will we still continue to do Tuesday and Thursday, or will we have to go back and renegotiate with Aging Ahead?
If we want to add any additional days than the Tuesdays and Thursday with Aging Ahead, we would have to go back with them to renegotiate that to see if they can do it.
It's working right now
for
the group that we have, but if we think outside of the box as we move forward, we have to look at that also.
Correct.
Okay. Are you still answering questions, or do I talk to Mr. Rose?
Refer to the mayor. I'm certainly happy to respond to any question that you have.
I'll just take two more minutes. Okay. I know that when all of this came up concerning the seniors, we were in the middle of the budget, and I knew that there were funds allocated. You know, some monies were put there so that we could operate. Are we within the ramification still of what was allowed?
Well, the budget is being managed by Darren, and it was placed up under, I believe it's up under the recreation, could be up under the community center. But we'll need to get information to you on how that budget is performing. That's something that we're simply not prepared to discuss tonight. But we'll be happy to provide that information as far as what those expenditures have looked like and whether it's consistent with what we forecast for your budget.
Okay. And my very last statement is concerning the ROARs. Have we found a way that the senior commission could just have a little corner in the ROARs newspapers when they come out?
Well, each month, when the ROARs is being prepared, there is a request that goes out to the department directors asking if you have articles to go into the ROARs. So I believe that that would be... If the seniors each month had or each quarter had a article to place in there, I think you could simply submit that article to Darren, and he would forward it on to our communications director.
Okay. So I'm pretty sure that after we have our next commission meeting next week that it will be discussed in more detail. We have discussed it before, but we did know that it had to come through the city. So I'm pretty sure Marsha will get with whoever about that.
I know that Allison is making, in fact, the request now for articles. So if you have something ready, I'm sure that we can accommodate placing that article in ROARs. But beyond that, I think it's every 2 months, we do a distribution of the ROARs, and I know that Allison would be happy to receive an article.
Okay. Yep. And my very last, a half a minute left. The city manager took up a minute of my time. No, I'm just joking. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. The date of that contract with Aging Ahead, is that like June to June?
I believe so. I'd have to look at it. It's either it expires at the end of June, I believe.
Okay.
So, it goes from July to the end of June.
To the end of June. Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Anything else to come before the body this evening? You're good?
I'm good.
Marsh, you good?
Do I need to push something? I brought with me something that I just figured this would be a good time to share with all of you. There was a survey that was commissioned by Andrea Rigonti in the spring of 2018. And Adam Brown oversaw this survey and worked with UMSL graduate students, sociology graduate students. And he developed a questionnaire that was designed to try to find out needs of seniors in our community. And that questionnaire was sent out by mail to the 800-some-odd people that are on my database. And it was posted on our web page on the city's website. And copies were taken to the senior center. They were taken to an AARP meeting. They were left out at Centennial Commons. And then Adam and some of the graduate students literally went from door to door and interviewed some people. So about 250 of those surveys were returned. I don't know about the data that we received. You know, I learned a lot just by being sort of around Adam in the process. How you phrase the question on a survey like this affects everything about the information that you get back. And so some of the information, I think, was a little fuzzy. But I have a draft summary. This is not a final report, but I have a draft summary with some of the data. Personally, I think that the almost more valuable information that came out of that survey, the very last question was, do you have any additional comments? And people wrote additional comments. And there was a lot of good stuff that they suggested. There were some complaints that they threw at the city. Mostly it was, could we do this? Or what about this? Or here's the need? Or why don't we have more block captains? Or so I compiled that, and it's just a list of miscellaneous comments from the survey. This is the report, the draft of the summary of that survey. And I can pass it around, or I can leave it. Should I pass these now, or do you want to wait till later? I'm afraid I only have 10 copies. I didn't realize there would be as many people at this table as there are. I thought about the city manager and the city council. So.
I think if you give the city manager a copy, you give the 7 minutes to council.
Okay, well, then I'm going to pass these around. I'm going to pass these around for council members and city manager.
Is there an option of getting it electronically?
I can do that. The other thing I guess I will ask, as long as I'm passing out paper, I don't know if all the city council members are familiar with this document. I just wanted you to know that it exists. This is something that is at the library and at Centennial Commons and that I share with anyone that I talk to. If they call and want information, I always make sure that I ask, are you on my mailing list? And if they're not, I put them on and I send one of these in the mail. This is something that I've edited several times since I started, and it is a list of, on the inside pages, all of the services and resources that the city itself offers our older citizens, and on the back page, it's a select list of some general St. Louis resources that I felt were the ones that people ask most often about.
Would it be fair to assume that perhaps we could meet again at a joint study session, like maybe once a year, or is that within the plans of the group?
The initial joint session was certainly to address those issues about compliance with codes, but I certainly would open that up to the mayor and council. I believe that meeting at least on an annual basis seems to make a lot of sense, but that will be their decision.
I think we'd be very open to it. I think we would candidly push that burden back on the senior commission, and if you'd like to have a joint session with us, we'd I'd be happy to honor that request, but if you'll request it, you'll get it.
We'll take it.
How's that? Anything else to come before the body? Hearing a motion to adjourn the study session. By Ms. Carr, seconded by Mr. Cusick. Now we'll move forward. Those in favor, aye. We'll move forward to open session public. Thank you.